Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, Queens is over, folks. We sit here in the media centre, surrounded by a pint of Pimm's, a pint of wine, and another pint of Pimm's. It's great. And we've just had Queens, the Since Championships, to be exact. Lots of other tournaments as well, which we'll come on to discuss on this edition of the Tennis Podcast. I felt a little bit at a loose end, a bit bereft without the podcast, Catherine. I know you've been probably a bit too busy talking on the telly to notice it as much as I have, but crikey, I've been looking forward to this.
Yes, I agree with the latter part of that sentiment. I've been very much looking forward to this. It was such a thrill to record the podcast all in person last Sunday, even more so than my very, very high expectations. But I have not been at a loose end. My ends have been very much tied.
Well, I mean, I suppose, strictly speaking, having run the media operation here, I haven't exactly been at a loose end. But anyway.
Queens is the one week of the year where I get a taste of what you two have all weeks of the year, where you're juggling other things with the podcast. Most of the time, I'm only doing the podcast, and I don't know how you do it, because, like Catherine, I'm very much looking forward to this podcast now. I've not felt at the end of every day ready to do a podcast.
Mm. Hence why we haven't. So, you know, lump it, listeners. My mother very, very sweetly asked me tonight, or said that my wife had told her that the reason she couldn't find one on her phone when she asked her to repair her phone as a result of it not showing podcasts is because we hadn't done one.
She and thought the app was broken.
Yeah, she did.
I like how it was more likely that the app was broken than it was that we weren't
she
doing podcasts.
She knows her son very well.
Correct. Just to answer your question, Matt, about how we juggle all these things, in my case I blag it, and so here we are. We've just had a week of tennis which started off in the most glorious sunshine imaginable when we had media day a week ago, which was the Sunday we recorded, wasn't it? The center court was bathed in the brightest sunshine imaginable. The new sponsor has got purple as its brand colour all around the centre court. And, I mean, it did look spectacular. And we had, what did we have, about 3 days of weather like that before it turned dramatically?
Three sweaty days that I'm not complaining about, but they were sweaty.
Did you have one of your air conditioning hoses?
For reasons I won't delve into details of, I did have to request a towel to sit on.
Right, thanks.
In the studio.
Detail. Yeah,
it was really hot. It hot in a sort of, everyone was saying, oh, we're not going to complain about the weather. In a sort of subtext, we're all complaining about how hot it is.
Yeah.
But I know it's London in June, and maybe there's a bit of recency bias here, but I can't remember as great a contrast in weather systems during a tournament. And maybe it's something about the way this tournament is affected by the weather, how exposed the centre court is. It's as open as a centre court can be. I mean, obviously, outdoor events are weather affected, but something about the way the stands are constructed, they are sort of they're opening themselves up to the sky, aren't they, the stands here?
They're almost collecting water.
Mm. Yeah, and look, I found a couple of days this week quite hard in the grim weather. You know, my job is to generate energy in the studio and transmit the excitement and the buzz of being on site. And look, it has been a tremendous joy to be on site in an event this week with crowds, no less. But generating energy when rain is piddling all over that energy and it's freezing cold and you have not dressed appropriately for the weather is quite difficult.
At what point did you make the wardrobe choice that would be inappropriate for the week? Is that how it works? Do you make it for a full week or not?
Well, the wardrobe choice is fine. It was a shoe. I made a very bad shoe choice.
Right.
Is the issue.
I've only got
because
the one
Because was it Thursday that...
You had to order shoes last minute.
Yeah, because I forgot mine. And I've only got one.
What was the day that was almost a total washout? Friday?
Yes.
So, well, actually, it wasn't. We thought it was going to be a total washout. And we actually got almost all the tennis played. But, again, an example of how exposed this place is to the weather. All of the sort of temporary surfaces, you stepped upon them and you sort of sunk down an inch and 2 inches of water emerged from nowhere. You think you're on solid ground and suddenly you're just in a puddle. And I spent most of my day with my exposed bare feet in a puddle.
Right. Mm. I see. Okay. I can't remember how we got onto that. What I do want to know, though, is at what point you thought Matteo Berrettini is going to win this title, which he has done. Top seed, first time he's ever played the event. When did you think he's going to win this?
I thought he should win it at the start of the tournament.
Oh, right.
And I think he thought that as well.
He did, didn't he?
He certainly said as much. He said that was his intention, came here to win the tournament. I think because we didn't have the grass last year, it's been easy to forget that Matteo Berrettini had a really good grass court season in 2019. Mm. Won Stuttgart, I think semi-finals of Halle, and then last 16 at Wimbledon, where he got beaten by Federer.
I think that
has probably spoiled
people's
things.
Perceptions of him on grass because he got thrashed by Federer.
And said thanks for the lesson afterwards.
Yeah,
that
and Federer's
is
kids
the line
were laughing
that
at him.
People remember.
And I think he knows it. He knows that he looked across that net and was just starstruck.
He's a different player now. I mean, that was before his US Open semi-final run, even.
And I'm now starting to wonder, I love a... you know, in hindsight narrative. I'm now starting to wonder how much of the story and him being a completely different player is down to that day and how much of a beating he took and, literal schooling.
I bet he had a good think about that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember where I've seen it. I think there's maybe an article that's been written this weekend in which he addresses it when he realizes he can't go into a match like that again, looking down the other end and being a bit of an autograph seeker almost. And he carried himself, like you said, in those interviews from the start of the week, he carried himself like the top seed.
Mm.
And anything other than winning the title would be disappointing to him. And all the way through the tournament, he only lost one set all tournaments. That was today in the final against Cameron Norrie. And Norrie had to pull rabbits out of the hat in order to win that second set. I mean, it was just wafer thin difference between them in that set. The rest of the week, nobody's... Apart from first round was his biggest struggle, wasn't it?
That was the only time he lost serve in that first round against his compatriot Stefano Travaglia.
That's how I've been saying
it. Okay, great. That was 2 tie breaks, and he was a breakdown in both of those sets, and then he didn't lose serve for the rest of the tournament. I think I've always known he had a big serve. The impact that serve has on grass is greater than I'd realised. I mean, no one was getting close to him. As you said, Cameron Norrie got a set, but it was a tie break, which he pinched. He didn't get close to Berrettini's serve throughout the rest of the match. And, you know, I know we talk about Berrettini's forehand, but every time I watched a rally this week and the ball went onto Berrettini's forehand, I thought, oh, point's over.
Mm.
The way he is able to just finish it with that shot, I'm not sure there's many players who can do that now. Okay, he's not played Novak Djokovic, for example, who's got imperious defence. But he played some good players this week. Andy Murray, Dan Evans, Cam Norrie in the form of his life. And he's hit through all of them. I think he's better than I realised. And that's kind of been the theme of the year with Berrettini. But I think on grass in particular, I've really felt that this week.
Suits him down to the ground. Mm. I think the time that made me think he is going to win this title was one rally against Dan Evans, who had him at 4-2 in the tiebreak in the first set, by the way. So that was, I think that was perhaps an underrated achievement from Evans to have got himself into that position in the first set. But the rally I'm referring to is one in which they were going toe-to-toe and he was hitting the big forehand. Evans was absorbing it, hitting a few of his own, and then he got him into his kind of rally, did Evans, and he started to have a dink-a-thon at the net, you know, with slice backhands and forth. And Berrettini almost just seemed to relish it. And he won the point hitting an inside-out sliced forehand, kind of curving left to right as he hit it. And he did it. He didn't need to do it. He did it deliberately because he could, because he's quite confident in that type of rally. And I thought, well, if he can win that sort of rally, how do you beat the guy? How do you beat him if he's got a serve that is way bigger than I realised? Because I was there for the final game of him against Andy Murray. I went out to stand courtside and try to sort of just feel the pace of the shot. Because he doesn't, I don't know, I've never thought of him as big a server as this. I suppose because the forehand dominates my thoughts. But he hit 142, 134, 140, 140 at Andy Murray. And Murray got one racket on the ball in the entire game. It was brutal, violent, the way he was hitting the tennis ball.
Yeah, I'd love to see him play Novak Djokovic on grass. That kind of serving and hitting, because that's when you'll really know how good that serving is.
Yeah.
If Djokovic can't get it back, I'd love to see that.
I heard pundits of yours saying that he is the second favourite for Wimbledon. This was before he won this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that is a reflection of how strong a favourite Novak Djokovic is, how few other genuine contenders there are, as much as it is about Berrettini without doing him down. But give me a name that you'd feel more confident about putting as the second favourite than Berrettini. I mean, it's not an open shut case that he's the second favourite, but I can't confidently tell you I'd put anybody ahead of him.
I'd have put Federer before this week.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come on to talk about Federer. I probably would have as well, but the experts I've been surrounded by don't feel great about Roger Federer.
We'll come on to speak about him a little bit more.
Yeah, I think I've come to think of the Wimbledon field as Novak Djokovic and the rest. But Matteo Berrettini, for me, is leading the pack of the rest.
Be fascinated to see where he ends up in the draw, because what's he going to be, about eighth or ninth seed, something like
that? Eighth, I would have. I mean, there's a big difference between eighth and ninth. I think he'll be seventh or eighth.
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll be a top eight.
Yeah,
because Nadal's gone. Yeah. That's the other big news of the week, isn't it? That Nadal has withdrawn from Wimbledon and the Olympics.
Mm.
So that's another seed out the way. He was thrilled with Berrettini today to win that trophy. And I think, look, I'm biased. I think most of us are about this event. It's in terms of its importance, its significance, and its the feeling that they get from winning it. You could see him with that huge silver trophy, and he loved it. But he had to wrestle it out of the way of Cameron Norrie, who this week, talking about people who are better than we thought they were, he is way better than I thought he was. I thought on this surface he would never do something like this. Even at the start of the week, Catherine, when you interviewed him, he didn't sound very confident about his chances, to be honest.
No, he surprised himself and surprised all of us. His performance in the final today reminded me of, made me think of some of the photos I've been getting this week that my mum's been sending me of Billie Jean with Rosie. with a look on her face of like, we're the same, right? We're the same size. I'm like, you know, we're cut from the same cloth.
And what is the differential?
I mean, there's probably, you could probably fit about 12 Billie Jeans in Rosie.
What is Billie Jean's a little cock?
She's a Cavapoo.
Cavapoo. Mm. And Rosie is a golden...
A lab retriever cross.
Right.
A Labrador, pretty much.
A blonde one.
Yeah.
Right.
Sort of a scrappy... I'm going to be your equal, even though you know I'm not really. But I'm going to pretend for a couple of hours.
Rose has very much got a sort of whatever. Look
yeah.
Just shut up.
I'm going to weather this storm. You're going to try and play with me. I'm going to let it happen for a little while. And then I'm going to win in the end.
Yes.
And there was another match like that this week, which was Nuri versus Karatsev, which was the one which stood out for me. Part of my job here at Queen's is to watch the matches and pick out points that will be good for a highlights reel. And sometimes you're watching matches and you're scraping around trying to think, is that a good point for a highlights reel? No, not really. But this match, honestly, we were clipping every single point, Nuri Karatsev.
Oh, really?
It was such high quality.
I didn't get to watch that match.
And Nuri was doing a similar thing as he did in the final day against Berrettini, going... Yeah, just going toe-to-toe with a bigger, stronger man and making his tennis work. And it's funny, you know, Nuri was in the same position today that Feliciano Lopez was in 2 years ago, which was in the singles final on the Sunday, and then a doubles semi-final to finish and potentially a final to play. And yet, now there were lots of other circumstances 2 years ago, most notably Andy Murray's presence. But last year, that was a huge story. You know, with Lopez. It was the story of the tournament. It was his tournament. Today with Nuri, it felt like a kind of afterthought that he was in all these matches. And I just think that's harshly, perhaps, but kind of reflective and symbolic of him as a tennis player. He is underrated, not talked about as much as he probably should be. He's had an amazing season.
Is he 12th in the race?
He could well be. He's won more matches.
I think he's 12th in the race.
Third final?
His third final of the season.
All different surfaces?
All different surfaces. He's won more matches than anyone bar Tsitsipas and Rublev. I mean, the strides he's made are incredible, really. I mean, I thought he was... I thought he was top 50
yeah.
max, and he's proving that he's more than that.
With, frankly... relative to the people surrounding him in the rankings, a limited toolkit. And I mean that as an absolute compliment to him. He is an example and an inspiration. He's incredible.
Mm. Total maximizer. And,
yeah. Absolutely.
And I almost wrote on Twitter today, your time will come, Cameron Nuri, for his first title.
Ooh,
and then
Hingis
I remembered
vibes.
Tennis Relived, and I thought, I'm not going to do that. Look, I just thought, keep knocking on that door, yeah. it might come.
But I mean, we had a funny old scene last night when he'd managed to get the semi-final win against Shapovalov, who's all extravagant winners left, right and centre, but he doesn't seem to have a clear game plan, a clear identity of who he is as a tennis player. And you've got Nuri perfectly satisfied with what yeah. he is. He's like, come on then, bring it on, I will find a way past you.
Yeah. I hope that Shapovalov has had that same assessment of that match and learnt what so many players and people generally could learn from Cameron Nori. I mean, I find him quite inspiring.
Yeah. Not convinced,
yeah, it
by
was,
way.
No. Shapovalov-wise, no.
I like Shapovalov, but... And
I am worried, very worried.
I haven't seen... a full acceptance of what you're talking about, really.
No.
But what we did have, I mean, that match finished pretty late last night, and then Nuri had to do TV interviews on court, then a press conference, and then we had to do final preview interviews for yourself with Amazon Prime Video and BBC TV and ATP Media. And because it was raining, we did it in the walkway next to the court, undercover, and it's dark and dingy.
And outside the loos.
Yeah, outside the loos. It was cold. He sat there in his shorts.
I couldn't believe how good that interview looked when we ran it on Prime. I was like, that's the loo I use right there.
And he's sitting there freezing, but he's in his shorts. And the first question that was asked to him was something along the lines of, you have a little bit of that thing that Rafael Nadal has. of no point is ever lost in your mind. And his face lit up. He was so pumped to be compared. And look, he's not Rafa Nadal. He never will be. But he's played him twice this year. The first time he gave him a good old fight. He's not good enough to beat him. And the second one he lost in straight sets at Roland Garros. But he did not disgrace himself. He brings it. And I think that there's definitely more to come from him because he's going to keep on coming.
So the only guy he's lost to at Slams this year is not in the draw at Wimbledon.
What does that mean?
I let Tim Hemman and Greg Brzezinski talk themselves into a brilliant cul-de-sac with that one on air earlier. I was like, so you're saying he can't lose? Okay, great. David is just choking on some pims.
That was so funny. what do we make of Andy Murray this week? How do you come out of this tournament thinking about Andy Murray? He won a first match in goodness knows how long. He beat Benoit Paire, which probably wasn't the worst draw in the world. And even Andy Murray slightly took the piss out of the fact that he'd beaten Benoit Paire, who wasn't that engaged, in his words. But still, you know, he got the job done. And then by common conclusion, most people felt he played okay against Berrettini. He lost 6-3, 6-3, but everybody's losing to Berrettini.
Yeah, I didn't think he played that well against Berrettini in terms of hitting the ball. I mean, I know that's a very reductive way of looking at tennis, but I just thought he had a bad ball-striking day. What I was most encouraged by, and I think Murray was as well, was his movement. I mean, we watched him practice at the start of the week, and actually the opposite was true. He was practice hitting the ball beautifully, of course he was, but he wasn't moving. I mean, he was literally standing on the spot hitting the tennis ball, and he looked great. He was the equal of Jannik Sinner.
He hit with Sinner, and I asked Sinner about that practice afterwards because, you know, he loved hitting with Andy Murray, and I said, how's he hitting? And he said, oh, brilliant. From the middle, brilliant. But it was a very... He didn't mean it like that. It was a compliment, but it was a very revealing compliment.
And yet then, when we got into the matches, I actually thought the movement was okay. I mean, look, he's not moving like he was at his peak, but neither was he sluggish. Like, I was a bit worried he might be. He was getting to balls. There were some brilliant shots on the run, encouraging signs. I think, in particular, moving towards that hip seemed okay. He just, I mean, to me, just didn't have his game when he played Berrettini.
And that wound him up. Rotten afterward. He cannot accept it, can he? The sort of extremist in him of wanting to be able to do it well. And like you say, it's not like he was failing to move. I think that the groin injury he has is a concern still, isn't it? He is worried about that. But he just felt he played rubbish in his mind, and he cannot handle that.
And I get that. I get that because, I mean, striking the ball shouldn't be the issue for him. And, overall, I think it's a positive because he did move better than everybody seemed to be expecting. I have no idea whether that's enough to win matches at Wimbledon. A lot will depend on the draw, you know.
I think more than ever.
For so many people.
Yeah, the best of
the
five
men's game
gives Murray time potentially to get some rhythm. If the groin is okay, there's a lot of ifs here, right? But if it is, and if he got a draw that was kind, if he gets Berrettini first round or someone like that, I don't back him to win. I just don't.
There has been a shift in how he's talking. I mean,
definitely.
It wasn't that long ago that he was heading off to Miami. And I think he gave that line that he still believes he can win Wimbledon this year. He's not talking like that anymore.
No.
Yeah, there has been a shift.
There's an acceptance.
Yeah, and that
he's not what he was physically.
Yeah, that makes me a lot more... I mean, I've always been completely behind him doing whatever he wants to do and whatever makes him happy, but it makes me a lot more comfortable as a viewer with him doing that because I don't think he's deluded. I think he knows he's not what he was, but I think he also knows that he's got other assets that nobody can take away from him, and that he sees a lot of players in the modern game not possessing, and they can compensate for a lot. And I genuinely think he loves tennis enough, and I think this is difficult for a lot, because not every top tennis player is wired this way. That's the thing. There is a difference in how even people that have been in the same situation feel. I do believe him when he says it's enough for him to have those moments. You know, we saw the emotional reaction after he beat Benoit Paire. That moment was why he'd been putting himself through what he has been to try and get back on the court. And I believe that those moments make it worthwhile for him at the moment. He doesn't need to be winning titles and competing at the deep end of Grand Slams for that work to be worthwhile. I don't know if that'll be the case in a month, 2 months, who knows. But right now, I think he knows where his body's at, honestly.
I think he still sees that as part of the process to getting to that point that you describe. And I'm not sure. I think if somebody were a fortune teller and able to say, well, that's not going to happen, Andy, I think that would be different.
Yeah. But then that's certainty, isn't it? And that's what he's out there playing for, to a certain extent, some control and some feeling of resolution about his career. And he's playing for not having sleepless nights in retirement, isn't he?
And as you say, he does. I mean, he keeps repeatedly saying, I love it.
Yeah.
And the tears that we saw, I mean, he does get you, doesn't he? Because he, I don't know what it is about him, but I mean, he gets everybody when you can see him composing himself, because he obviously bottles all this up and he's trying so hard. He's working and putting heart and soul in, and then suddenly he gets what he was after all this time, a win. And it's such a struggle to get that these days. So good luck to him, I say. I mean, you know, I really hope the best for him.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. The one other singles player I just want to mention quickly from Queens is Jack Draper, who got a wild card into this tournament, a late wild card, and I know that it was a real touch and go as to whether he would get one because he came in not fully fit. But he managed to get wins in the first round over Yannick Sinner. I think it was the first match of the entire tournament, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
On the Monday, which was a real shock to me, I have to say. I mean, I remember when Draper was in the final of the Wimbledon boys 3 years ago, and he was really exciting. But let's be honest, he hasn't made any strides since then as an adult tennis player.
He'd never beaten a top 200 player.
Right.
And Jannik Sinner's a top 25 player.
And look, that's not to do him down, because I think it is a difficult transition, and people take it at different times and durations in order to get there. And he is only 19. But when you see him play Jannik Sinner, and to have felt at the start of that match, there's no chance he's going to win this match. This guy has been making himself a hardened professional, winning titles, and even Draper didn't think he got a chance, really, did he?
And everyone felt that even more so when he was 4-love down with points for 5-love to Jannik Sinner.
I remember actually being in here in this media centre when that match was going on. And I was looking at the screen saying 4-love. Well, of course it's 4-love. And Mike Dixon from the Daily Mail came up and he said, do you know, he's actually in a lot of these points. He's not winning them, but he's in them. And he was, you could tell Mike was thinking, get into the match. Go on, just get into the match and then let's see what you've got. And my God, did he. And he fought back and he won that set from a 4-love deficit and won it on a tiebreak, and then he ended up winning what, 4 tiebreak sets in a row.
I think that's what impressed me most about him this week. All the sets he won were tiebreaks, you know, 2 against Jannik Sinner, 2 against Alexander Bublik, who has been in great form and I think has a game which really transfers to grass as well. I think that's another good win for Draper.
One of Andy Murray's ones to watch on grass this year. He did a VT for us. He picked out 3 players. 2 were very obvious. Can't remember who they were, but, you know, whoever you're thinking of when you're listening to this. I think one might have been world number 1 Novak Djokovic. Anyway, the other one was Bublik.
What's a VT?
I think it's videotape from the old days, but it's a, you know, when I say, here's Andy Murray to tell you about grass court tennis. Oh. That's a VT.
I'm with you.
Yeah. I just think winning tiebreaks against top players is a great sign. You know, when he needed his tennis most, it was there, and he didn't shrink in those big moments. He feels like someone who's going to rise to an occasion. You know, I actually think going back now to playing what, you know, futures challengers, that's the next test. You know, once you've had a taste of a week like this, to then go back to playing in front of nobody on smaller courts without that adrenaline rush that he must have felt this week, that's where the next test comes, because he can mix it with these players.
What's his game? How come he's beaten Sinner and Bublik? What's his game?
Well, he's got a big lefty serve, which is a great starting point, I think. He's consistent from the back of the court, but he's powerful as well. You know, he doesn't feel underpowered. He's big. Gonna get David to make his Andy Roddick comparison now. He's been trying to tell everyone that he looks like a young Andy Roddick.
Been telling everyone that everyone looks like a young Andy Roddick.
No,
how many players have you compared to Andy Roddick this week?
I have not. I've always said it's Jack Draper, with the way he pulls his hat down over his eyes.
But there was another one.
No,
it was Berrettini.
No,
you did compare Berrettini to Roddick.
No, similar gait, similar sort of physical. Actually, the big thing is, It's the attitude. It's come on then, you know. And he's got the bravado and the self belief to hit a shot and go, yeah, come on, you know, like right in their face. And I love that, to be quite honest, against players much his senior.
And I think there's a pretty good tennis IQ there as well. He's not just hitting the ball for the sake of it. He's
got
constructing
nice feel
points,
as well.
Nice feel.
Improvises occasionally.
Yeah, exactly. I do think he's got something about him which everyone was talking about, as you said, 3 years ago when he reached the Wimbledon boys final, that those little elements of his game you can still see. It's just, as you said, he hasn't really kicked on since then, and I hope a week like this can be a building block. But as I said, it's tough to go back to what he knows after this.
Well we keep thinking back as well to that match in Miami when he faded so horribly and ended up retiring. But this was a big kick on, and he'll be an interesting player to watch. So that's Queens. And in the doubles, incidentally, I should just say Nicolas Mahut and Pierre Hugobert went straight from Paris winning the French Open to win the title at Queens. And they did so, having, I think, been maybe a couple of points from defeat.
That's two tournaments in a row where they've saved three match points in the semi-finals. They did it at Roland Garros, and they've done it now at Queens this week.
And they were definitely down and in trouble in the first round, I think.
Yeah.
And they've done it all despite Pierre Hugobert, bless him, just simply not being able to close out a tennis match.
I went to the courtside.
He knows it as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he
said in his speech.
Does.
Right, Nico's more experienced than I am.
Yeah.
They were set in 5-4 up and serving, and at that point, me as the media director says, "All right, we've got the presentation coming up here. I better go courtside." Off I went, and I couldn't get in time, so I'm basically stood behind a fence looking at the scoreboard and watching it tick to love 15, love 30, love 40, break, 5-all. Okay.
There was a double fault where both serves barely found the baseline, let alone the service box.
Oh dear.
It was, yeah.
He's a lovely chap.
And so great.
I think they're the first team to win Roland Garros and Queens back-to-back since 2012, which was...
What a stat.
Max Meernier and Daniel Nesta. And that was... And 2012 would have been a time where there was there was no gap between them, right?
Yeah.
And,
so that's
and
the same
Mo
achievement.
Did all but admit, or sort of did a veiled admission in his interview with us that on the Eurostar over here last Monday, they were hugely hungover.
Good for them.
I mean, maybe I'm reading between the wrong lines, but yeah, he referred not particularly feeling great on the Eurostar.
I hope this isn't too ageist, but I slightly fear for them. Over best of five sets. I know they had that five-set epic against Cabal and Farah, didn't they, a year or two ago? I can't remember exactly when it was. And they won the title in 2016, but it just feels like a long match, really, for poor old Nicolas Mahut.
They're all right.
He's about 50, isn't he? 40.
He's okay. 39.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, anyway, well
Nothing
done to
in
them.
Doubles.
They're lovely blokes, and congratulations to them. They beat Riley Opelka and John Peers, who played well as well over the course of this tournament. I'm just going to go over to Haller and tell you what went on there. Before we talk about the winner, what happened to Roger Federer? I mean, he lost a match in, what, three sets against Felix Auger-Aliassime and then spent forever to come into the press conference.
So he beat Ilya Ivashka in his opening match in two very tight sets, which I didn't see, but I read that, you know, he was as good as he needed to be. And then he's playing Felix Auger-Aliassime in the second round, which is an interesting one for so many reasons. Auger-Aliassime had just lost another final. And is still working with Uncle Tony, or just Tony,
Tony
depending
Nadal.
On how you want to approach that name. And, you know, Roger Federer, he's not exactly played down the pressure on his matches this grass court season, has he? I mean, we all know why he's still playing tennis. It's because he thinks he might have a chance of winning Wimbledon and maybe winning the Olympics, frankly. And I was, we were on air at this point, and I'm getting updates through my ear on what's happening in Halle, because that's an event that we were showing on Prime Video, but not covering in the studio, because obviously the studio's here at Queen's, and Cameron, that works in graphics in our gallery, big tennis fan, I trust his knowledge of the sport, said, described him as sublime, Federer, in the opening set. You know, I'm getting reports in my ear, Federer's being Federer in Halle. And, you know, I'm starting to think of, you know, the old, how long is this Felix Auger-Aliassime and Uncle Tony thing going to last? And then he goes and loses the thing in, I think, a 6-4 second set, one break of serve in the second set, and then 6-2 third set, which, look, honestly, I didn't see. But it sounds like his level dropped off considerably. He then takes 2.5 hours to come to press.
Which is rare.
And he acknowledges that's rare and really admits to being furious at himself. And in particular, his, quote, bad attitude. And he only spoke in English in the press conference. All the Swiss journalists had to ask him questions in English, which, again, to his great credit, is extremely rare. We're in a slightly difficult position of not having seen it. And he's obviously not entered another tournament this week. He's content to practice on the grass at Wimbledon. But the experts I'm surrounded by do not think Federer's winning Wimbledon. And probably don't think he's in the mix. I mean, everybody caveats that with, we'll wait and see the draw. I mean, obviously the draw is huge, but I haven't heard anybody this week saying he's in with a chance of winning Wimbledon.
Okay, well, he's in my mix. Anybody else?
He's in my mix because who on earth else is in the mix, really? It's a slim...
Yeah, and the 8 Wimbledons.
Yeah, well, exactly. If anything's going to get you into a very slim pick and mix, it's 8 Wimbledons.
For people who have only just in the last few months started listening, what's the mix again?
Oh, God, what's the formal definition? People that you wouldn't be surprised to see win it.
Win it.
Yeah.
We were big on this 2 years ago, but then there was this pandemic and we've just completely lost track. I have anyway.
I mean, he's in my mix, but that's if I'm broadening the mix beyond Novak Djokovic.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
He feels like such a strong favourite for Wimbledon. But the thing is, we've got no evidence whatsoever that Federer can physically play more than 3 matches in a row. I mean, when was the last time he did that? It would have been the 2020 Australian Open, wouldn't it? I actually thought his tennis looked quite good at the French Open in large parts. It was patchy, but there were lots of promising signs. Sounds like he played very well in that first set against Auger Aliassime, but it's not lasting. He can't piece it together for multiple matches, which is what he needs to do to even contend at a Grand Slam, never mind win it.
And I know Greg Rozetsky thinks that his loss of fear factor is significant. Nobody's afraid of playing him anymore. And in fact, quite the contrary, players will spy an opportunity to beat the great Roger Federer, the 8-time champion.
Where it used to be spy an opportunity to share the court with him.
Yeah, absolutely. See Matteo Berrettini only 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's still Roger Federer at Wimbledon. Yeah, he's in my mix, but I am not predicting him to win the title.
Mm. Okay. Well, the player who did win the Haller title... And given that the players that had entered this tournament initially, I think at one point they'd got 6 of the world's top 10. I don't think they all ended up playing.
There was one seed in the quarterfinals. It was extraordinary because it was a strong field, strong.
The man who won it was Hugo Humbert, who, very talented left-hander from France, who, to my mind, the player that sticks in my head because he had that epic against Nick Kyrgios in the Australian Open. That's what I think of when I think of Hugo Humbert at the moment. But just listen to the players he's beaten here. In the first round, he's beaten Sam Querrey 4-6, 7-6, 7-6 in the first round. He's then beaten Zverev 6-3 in the third. Then he's beaten Sebastian Korda 6-4 in the third. Then he's beaten Felix Auger-Aliassime 7-6 in the third. So that's 4 successive 3-set matches. And then he's knocked Andrei Rublev off in the final.
Would you like an epic stat?
Yep.
Roger Federer has won 10 Haller titles and has one top 10 win in Haller. Hugo Humbert has won 1 Haller title and has 2 top 10 wins.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Matt Who Roberts. Is Federer's one top 10 win in Haller? Oh, can you get this, David?
I'm not certain. I think
Leighton
I know.
Hewitt.
Hewitt or Haas?
I think it might be Safin.
I mean, all of these people have retired about 10 years ago.
Hey, Leighton Hewitt is still playing doubles.
In his eyes, he's still active. he's having a bit of a time off.
But I mean, that is an incredible week for Humbert. And he came in to the grass on a five-match losing streak on the clay. He had an absolutely miserable time. Ever since that match against Kyrgios at the Australian Open, even a little bit before that, I think he might have won Antwerp, maybe, at the end of last season. I've thought he's a neat, tidy, good tennis player. I've sort of had a bit of an eye on him. And then in the clay court season, I kept looking at his results, and he was just losing every week, and he seemed to have no confidence whatsoever. So to then go into the grass court season and put this together in Halle, I think is really impressive. And actually, he does have a game which I think can suit the grass. I think he's already reached the last 16 at Wimbledon. He's got, kind of like Cam Norrie on his backhand, he's got a really short backswing. Mm. I think that helps him on the grass. He's another lefty. He's got good touch, good feel. I think he will always be, or certainly at the moment, probably a little bit underpowered against the very, very best players, particularly over five sets, I think.
It makes me want to go back and watch the highlights of some of those matches and understand
how he's doing.
They've been very close, but I want to understand what works for him. You know,
didn't he challenge, or I say, like, relatively challenge Djokovic at Wimbledon a couple of years ago?
I know he beat,
or was that
Felix or
someone else entirely?
Her catch.
I get those two mixed up the time. It was her catch.
It was her catch, wasn't it?
Yeah, because...
Well, he disappeared off the face of the planet.
Djokovic beat Humbert 6-3, 6-2, 6-3.
Right.
Whereas...
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
With her catch, and I was going to say, before Catherine said it, I was going to say I get those two mixed up all the time. Djokovic beat her catch 7-5, 6-7.
Yes, that is what I'm remembering.
6-1, 6-4.
Yes.
So, Catherine, okay. I think we're going to... We're not going to give you that, but we're going to forgive you that.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I'll definitely take that.
So anyway, very major congratulations to Hugo Humbert. I think it's time we went to Birmingham now.
Mm.
Not only because I'm absolutely delighted to be going back there tomorrow, but because the title winner in Birmingham, which I should add, is a tournament that has dropped in its level. It's gone a category lower, hasn't it, on the tour. They lost their I think what sanction would it have been, a 500 sanction. I guess it would have been in today's money.
And that's now Berlin, is the 500.
That's right. But it's a great story because it's been won, Birmingham, by Ons Jabeur, her first ever WTA title. She becomes the first Arab woman ever to win a WTA title. I still find it quite hard to believe that she hasn't won one before.
I was very surprised by the headlines about that win. I had her in the category of title winners on the WTA.
Certainly at the lower level of the WTA tour.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, I know we did have her on the podcast, didn't we, talking about how a title was her goal, but I still thought maybe on the lower level she'd have won one already. But anyway, the scenes on this court when she beat Daria Kasatkina to win the title. By the way, what a lovely matchup that is. Mm. You know, you'd pay to watch that. But she was basically on her knees in ecstasy and emotion. I mean, it meant so much to her. She said, "I had to win this title just to breathe out a little bit. And also to be the example."
Wow. I remember watching her in the final of one of the Charleston events earlier this year. I think she lost to Astra Sharma, who was, you know, someone who on paper she certainly should have beaten, and I think did beat quite handily at the recent French Open. You know, she's got more game than Astra Sharma, and yet on that day she seemed completely inhibited by nerves, did Ons Jabeur. So for her to get over that hurdle of winning a title, I think is really significant. And
that's the thing that is, by the way.
Totally.
That she has put this pressure on herself. She is going to do it this year. This is the year.
And doing it will represent something. I love how she embraces that. There are there are disappointingly few players that do that. There's, you know, there's a lot that sort of happen to do it by extension, but sort of distance themselves from representing something bigger than themselves. And I get it, it's a very individual sport. You know, by standing for something more than yourself, you're inviting extra pressure. But I do think it is admirable and inspiring that she invites that extra pressure by wanting to stand for something and represent something and being an example, yeah, to others. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So Ons Jabeur, winner. Alex Bolt won the Nottingham Challenger. Another great story here in Berlin, the one there that Matt referenced. A qualifier, Ludmila Samsonova, won Berlin. And listen to the people she beat on the way to doing that. She beat Belinda Bencic from a 1-6 first set deficit. She then beat Victoria Azarenka, Madison Keys, 7-6 in the third, Veronika Kudermetova, Marketa Vondrosheva, and in qualifying, even just to get into that draw, Samsonova beat Anna Konyu, 7-6 in the third.
And she's got herself a Wimbledon main draw wildcard.
Has she?
Mm. Oh, yeah, great. I mean, I think she was only 2 or 3 spots outside direct acceptance. And that tends to be how they do it, if there are wild cards going spare. But yeah, massive. Absolutely massive.
Another one, the WTA do some really good highlights, don't they, on their YouTube page, which, I mean, look, for obvious reasons, our attentions have been focused on Queens, but wow, it doesn't often make me want to go and watch some of this stuff.
Yeah, and look, we've only seen Queens because we've all been working on Queens. It was one of those moments today where all of these finals were happening at the same time.
Were they? You know,
Queens, Halle, Birmingham and Berlin. And look, I get it. In, you know, when they're all in Europe, it's all on similar time zones. I understand it's difficult, but gosh, it does feel like a tennis shooting itself in the foot moment.
Yeah.
Note it down for the end of the season when we do our awards, an anti-award.
Already so many contenders.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's been one of those years. Wimbledon qualifying is about to begin next day or so, and so we'll be watching that with interest, and we will bring the details of who's qualified for Wimbledon in our pre-Wimbledon podcast in a week's time. We've got a couple more before then as well. Just a couple of little stories that we weren't able to cover in the last week because we didn't do a Thursday podcast, despite thinking about it. we decided it wasn't the best idea when we were finishing at 2 a.m. One is that very shortly after the podcast we recorded last week, it came out that Stefanos Tsitsipas had lost his grandmother just on the eve of the final. And he posted a very heartfelt Instagram post about his grandmother's passing. And I can't imagine how difficult that was for him. And incidentally, Tsitsipas pulled out of Halle, understandably, and actually ended up here at Queen's Club today. He was practicing over on court 5, I think it was, for an hour or so, and I guess he's back in the bubble now and trying to get ready for Wimbledon. Joe Konter won a title as well in the second week of the French Open. That was in Nottingham, pretty handily as well. She powered through the draw but has since withdrawn from everything else before Wimbledon, including Eastbourne, and it seems this knee is a problem again.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, when I saw that withdrawal, I thought, oh, well, you know, maybe it's one of those withdrawals, and, you know, she's got the matches she needed by winning the title. But then I thought, Eastbourne's her home, isn't it?
And it's also,
you know,
like a week between. I mean, I understood Birmingham when she pulled out of that because she just won Nottingham, but really.
Yeah, it's not great. I don't know where Jo Konta is at the moment. She's very difficult to fathom currently. Certainly her winning the title in Nottingham came as a surprise to me. That felt out of nowhere, just as much as her then seeming to be injured off the back of it came from nowhere. It's a very inconsistent situation. I certainly don't. She's not in my Wimbledon mix, put it that way.
Matt, what went on in Stuttgart? Because Marin Cilic won a title. That hasn't been happening very recently. And Felix Auger-Aliassime lost another final. And what is that? 0-16 in sets in finals. I know it's a bit mean to keep pointing that out, but it is also a fact.
I thought you were going to say, I know it's a bit mean to ask you, because I know you didn't see any of it.
Sorry.
No, yeah, so a title for Marin Cilic, which came out of the blue for me, really. I mean, I know his form has slightly been improving, but most of the time the answer to did Marin Cilic win over the last few months has been a resounding no. And actually, he was good this week in here at Queen's as well. He won a couple more matches and ended up losing in three to Alex Dumanul. But, you know, his form is picking up. He's going to be unseeded at Wimbledon, I believe, unless there are lots of withdrawals and he gets in before Friday's the draw, But, I mean, the form he's shown on grass in the last couple of weeks would suggest that not many seeds would want to be drawing Marin Cilic in round one. He's finding some form again. And, yeah, as for Ozhali Asim, I mean, that is a definite thing now. I think after I'm trying to work out when I became really worried about that. I think after four or five I wasn't actually that worried. I thought it was just a great achievement that he's getting to so many finals, and it still is. He's still very young, and that's a lot of finals to have reached, but he is freezing in these finals and his game is completely malfunctioning. He's not, as you said, he's not even winning sets. And he's got to find a way to overcome that.
Yeah, it's not a foregone conclusion anymore that he'll do this. He still has a great game.
Do what?
It was 2 years ago that it. For most of the tennis world, it was a foregone conclusion that he'd be winning Grand Slam titles.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Multiple Grand Slam titles, probably world number one. You know, him and Tsitsipas duking it out in multiple Grand Slam finals, tussling, you know, being the next Federer and Nadal. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying foregone conclusion on this podcast, but that is how people felt about it at the time. And I don't think all confidence has dissipated, but there is definitely not conviction.
Do you not think that if he just wins one of them, that'll be that? Not one slam, I mean a title, then that baggage will have gone.
But why? This is happening for a reason. It's not just happening to happen.
Well, he's got a problem. There's no question he's got a problem.
And yeah, I mean, I know Roger Federer didn't win his first slam till he was 23. 21, okay. You know, I know that when precocious talents break onto the scene and expectations are heaped upon them, you know, 2 years later you can go, well, why haven't they done all those things? And you're like, well, they're still only 19. I know that that's a thing. But I don't think this is quite that anymore. I do think it's something more than that. And I don't think the Uncle Tony thing was working out. Yes, you could point to him reaching a final, but I don't expect that to last.
Beat Federer this week. Got to the semis, lost to Hugo Humbert. Well, got to the final of the doubles.
Yeah, which, very misleading photo.
They're holding the second biggest trophies ever. God knows what the winners look like. Yeah.
Felix and Hercash have won another title. No, yeah. That was the runners-up trophy.
So delighted with a plate in the doubles, yeah.
He needs to play Cameron Norrie in a final, and then one of them will break their final duck.
Let's make that happen. Okay, well, we'll follow his progress with interest. One of the noter, Kiki Bertens, is to retire later this year, and that came out of the blue to me in terms of it really doesn't feel like very long ago that she was contending for major titles, but then she had a major physical problem, the pandemic. It's just and it's just not been happening for her, has it? That's the gist of it.
Yeah, I mean, her career is a tale of the unexpected, isn't it? Kind of, she had her success when nobody was particularly expecting it of her. Then she faltered when people did start expecting success of her. And now she's unexpectedly retired, but maybe sort of reflecting on her career and her character, we shouldn't be as surprised as we are. But we were discussing this match, and she's never quite been the same player since that French Open, when she went in as one of the favourites and had to retire on the Philippe Chatrier court.
It's sad to think that that was her only shot at the French Open in what would you probably call her peak. You know, she was a real favourite at that French Open, the 2019 French Open. We were, you know, in the press room, and the journalists were going, you know, the Dutch journalists were really going mad for Kiki Bertens.
Fairly sure I picked her for the title.
And sorry, her career, Kiki, has never been the same.
But from everything we hear, she's a really good egg.
And, yeah, she's great.
Very good player as well. And wish her all the very best in the future.
Just to say, we touched on Rafael Nadal's withdrawal from Wimbledon and the Olympics. I mean, how much did that take you by surprise? Because it really did take me by surprise. I know that some journalists were saying that he'd hinted at it during his post-match press after Roland Garros, and I'm sure that perhaps was the case. I think for me it was the double whammy. I think the Wimbledon withdrawal didn't surprise me that much. To then skip the Olympics as well, I mean, I know the Olympics is not quite the same this year. You know, there are lots of players talking about potentially skipping the Olympics. Dominic Thiem, okay, he's never been, but he's pulled out this week. But yeah, I mean, that did surprise me. Maybe it shouldn't. Maybe there has to come a time when Nadal really starts to prioritize events. You know, it was not that long ago that he couldn't make it through a hard court tournament. He was retiring or withdrawing from lots of them. But it seemed like he'd had a really good run of physical health. I know he was struggling in that fourth set against Novak Djokovic at the French Open with a foot problem, I think it was. But I was taken aback by that double withdrawal from Nadal. It's certainly a shame for the, you know, for the months and tournaments ahead.
Mm. Yeah, me too. I was surprised as well, but as you say, a lot of people didn't seem so surprised. And I wonder how badly he was feeling it in that fourth set against Djokovic. But, well, we covered it in detail last week, and I still feel that Djokovic can look at that and feel like he beat the main man on clay, Rafael Nadal, in that match. Right then, that pretty much sums up a podcast for this week. We have got more planned in the weeks to come. We're going to be producing a couple of editions of Tennis Relived, Wimbledon Relived, for you later this week. Not sure exactly which day, but it'll be out a couple of them this week, with the story of the Wimbledon boycott in 1973 and the journey to equal prize money. And I'm fairly confident those will be very interesting shows to listen to, mainly because of the people we've been speaking to.
Oh, yeah. Really excited about those shows.
Oh, I'm even more excited now. Mm. Brilliant. Right, we got some shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, we do. For Bev Neal.
Right, Bev.
Hello, Bev.
Do you know about any Bevs?
No, I was going to reference Alex Neal, the football manager, but...
Yeah, he's in my bad books at the moment, because he turned down West Bromwich Albion.
Yeah.
And our Bev Neal is really nice. Yes. So, you know.
Yes. Hello, Bev.
All right, Bev.
We have Judith Cohn.
All right, Judith.
Hello, Judith. Like Judith Chalmers.
Indeed. Mm. Who was from Wish You Were Here in the 80s.
Well, I think, and 90s.
Oh, hence why you know she is. Thanks ever so much for your support, Judith.
And finally, we have Laura Vergani, which feels very appropriate given our Italian winner at Queen's.
Yes.
And Laura was our guest editor earlier in the year for our Yvonne
Goolagong podcast. A really good guest editor. And Laura sent me a lovely compliment about my hair on Instagram.
Well, isn't that marvellous? It has been quite cool. I don't really know what they've been doing with it, but it's looked quite cool as from what I could see. And I would just like to make a little shout out to Ryan, Dan and Matt, who I ran into on the grounds here at Queen's the other day.
One of his fans.
Well,
some of his fans.
Yeah, Ryan, I think it was Ryan who had the Jack Grealish hair probably a mistake. They're all three very nice lads, and I said I'd mention them on the podcast for free. So there we are. Right.
Everyone who's paid for a shout out is now delighted for Ryan. Who was it, Ryan?
Ryan, Dan and Matt.
Ryan, Dan and Matt.
Two shout-outs
okay.
for the price of zero. So there we are. Right, well, we'll be back with more Tennis Podcast. And when we get to Wimbledon, we will be coming your way every single night. And we'll be recording in Catherine's flat, which I'm still trying to come up with a good name for.
Tennis Podcast Towers, yeah.
Yes, can't wait. It's going to be epic. So thanks for your company all week long, folks. I've enjoyed the tournament here at Queen's immensely. I've enjoyed this podcast for the last hour immensely as well, and hope you have too, and we'll see you in a few days' time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.